on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Hello, good evening, and welcome along to another 105 Sports special here on Cambridge 105 Radio, the show where we ran up all of the latest local sports news from the week and also see how lockdown is affecting those people involved. On today's show, I chat to former chairman of the 100 Years of Coconuts and man of all knowledge and history and heritage surrounding Cambridge United, Pat Morgan, about the U's promotion winning side of the 1969-70 season after this week marked the 50th anniversary of the club's election to the Football League. Neil Robertson and Joe Perry return to the Bays this week in Snooker's Championship League in Milton Keynes, so I chat to the Metro's Phil Haig, who covers all things snooker for the paper, about how the sport has managed to return and our Cambridgeshire-based players' chances of success in the last few tournaments of this season. And the CAMS Cricket Association have put forward a proposal of how they see in the recreational 2020 season taking shape for the senior and junior divisions. I speak to first Martin Livermore, the competition secretary of the CCA, and get Cambridge NCI captain Mike Sewell's thoughts on the plans too. If you want to get in touch, you can do at 105 Sport on Twitter and Facebook. Thank you very much for tuning in. We'd love to hear your views. My name is Ollie Slack, and up first this evening, let's talk Cambridge United, but let's go way back, 50 years in fact, to the season of 1969-70, when the U's got elected to the Football League for the very first time. Joining me now to discuss it, he was a fan at the time, he's now a historian of the club, Pat Morgan, the former chairman of the 100 Years of Coconuts. Pat, thanks very much for joining me.
My pleasure.
How are you doing, first of all? How has lockdown been for you?
I haven't seen much difference, to be honest with you. I'm still working away at home, as I have been for many years now. You know, working on research and getting Andrew Bennett's United books out and various other things. So no real change for me.
Are these the Andrew Bennett books that have covered a vast time of Cambridge United's history? Where are we up to now with them? I think there's been three released?
Yeah, there's three out there in the world at the moment, taking us from 1912 up to 1980. Now, the volume that's coming out next, Volume 4, is at the printers now, so it should be with you soon, and it covers the decade and a bit from 1980 to 1992. 1992 is where United, of course, came so close to getting into the first Premier League. So that's that'll take us to 92, and then there's an awful lot of work to do to get to bring the history almost up to date.
Well, lots to do with regard to that. But the reason we've got you on, Pat, is because this week it was a very special anniversary, the 50th anniversary, in fact, since the U's got elected into the Football League in 1970. Firstly, what were your memories of that time, the team, the time being a Cambridge United fan?
Yeah, you look back and, of course, you know, I was only young at the time. I think I was 16 in 1970. And everything's bathed in a golden glow. You don't tend to remember, you know, the wet Tuesday nights in Weymouth. Matches in my memory are always bathed in sunshine and glory. But so I don't remember so much individual matches and individual players as much as the feeling at the time. And my memories of that time were just of me being immensely proud of my little club. And when we were elected to the league, it was a feeling of almost disbelief. I couldn't really believe what had just happened. Football was a completely different game in 1970. Young supporters of today wouldn't recognise the game almost, and certainly they wouldn't recognise the media, TV, radio and press as they were at that time. There was hardly any football on telly, the cup final once a year, and that was about it. There was no local radio, no internet, of course. And so news got about in a very different way. If you were a U's fan, say you'd missed a game, you had to rely on the local press, the Cambridge News, on Saturday nights. That's a great memory, actually, of queuing up to get the Saturday night's sports paper, the light blue, which came out, was published within just about an hour of games finishing and rushed to the news agent's box. So news got about by newspapers or by word of mouth, or you had to be there to see the events themselves. And there was massive local pride in clubs. And on the local side of things, a lot of people still looked on United in 1970 as the junior club in Cambridge. Cambridge City were traditionally the bigger club, and it was only in recent years that United had begun to overtake them. So that's where the pride came from. United fans were immensely proud of what was happening, and that's the overwhelming memory I have of that time. Just huge, huge pride.
And we use the words carefully and use the word elected, because it's slightly different nowadays to what it was back then. What did exactly elected to the Football League mean? Why do they have to be elected?
Yeah, it was completely different. There was no, in those days, there was no national league or conference, of no automatic promotion to the league or relegation from the league. That didn't come in until about 86 or 87, I think. So if you wanted to be a fourth division club, what you had to do is persuade the chairman of the 92 Football League clubs to vote for you at the annual general meeting of the Football League. So the bottom four clubs in the league were obliged to apply for re-election every year, and the league clubs would vote on those four clubs and any non-league clubs that had put themselves forward for election to the league. The only other way to get in the league was to wait for a football club to go bust. And that's what happened in 62, actually, when Accrington Stanley went to the wall and Oxford took their place. There hadn't been an election to the Football League since 1960, when our friends from up the A1, Posh, took over from Gateshead. So there had been 10 years of no elections to the league when United did gain that election. So United were a successful club. They'd won the Southern League 2 years running. They were probably the wealthiest club outside the league, thanks to the amazing commercial activities that were going on at the time. And they made sure that United were looked on as the most progressive club at the time. And they ran also a big PR campaign to get the league chairman onside and get their votes at the AGM. And that's what happened. We were elected in place of Bradford Park Avenue on the 30th of May, 1970. It doesn't seem 50 years ago, but it certainly was.
Blimey, great memories from that time then. And who knows, we could have some kind of election scenario this year if the Football League season doesn't get finished and the National League season doesn't get finished, and maybe Harrogate or Notts County, who was second and third in the National League, go up into the Football League. It could be a similar sort of scenario for the first time in a long while. And was it the first time the users actually got into the Football League, Pat?
Yes. Oh, yes, that was the first time they got into the league.
So, like, a really significant moment in the club's history then?
Hugely significant. And the significance came from the progress that the club had made, rapid progress, in an incredibly short time. Now, United were playing in the Cams League in 1947. Now, if you look at one or two Kershaw Premier teams today, say, I don't know, Great Shelford or Linton Granter, and said to them, look, you may be playing in the Cams League today, but in 23 years' time, in 2043, you'll be in the EFL in League Two. If you said that to them, they'd look at you quite rightly as if you were completely bonkers. But that's actually what United achieved. From 1947 in the Cams League, they've took the first steps towards professionalism, going professional, forming a limited company, joining the United Counties League, and then moving into the Eastern Counties League, Southern League in 1958, and then consolidating in the Southern League, finishing as runners-up in 1963. Runners-up, incidentally, to the champions, who were Cambridge City. And then really pushing towards the championship, the titles, and towards election to the league from that time on. Just 23 years from the Cambridgeshire League to the Football League, and that's where the significance of that amazing achievement lies.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. And give us a flavour, Pat, of what the squad was like at the time, the manager, Bill Leavers. Give us a flavour of some of the key players and what Bill was like as a manager at that time.
Well, Bill, who's an amazing manager, he was a man of huge talents, obviously. He was a very forceful personality. And one of the important things about him was that there were no limits to his confidence in his own ability. Now, Bill went to the directors in 1967 when they appointed him as manager in the latter half of the 66-67 season, and he said, "Thanks for appointing me. I'm going to get Cambridge United into the Football League within 3 years." And that's exactly what he did. Now, that's an amazing achievement, 3 years to do that job. And he had some very decent players. He had an eye for a player, of course. Looking back at that squad, it was a tiny squad, of course. He only had one substitute in those days. I think there were probably about 14, 15 players who could, look forward to a first team place. The thing that strikes me now, looking back at that squad, is that apart from Keith Barker, who was a local lad, a goalkeeper, and one or two others, they were all experienced, seasoned professionals who Bill had picked up. A lot of them from the Football League, but not all, but they all had that experience that was needed to see out a long, hard season. Names, of course, stick out in the memory. There's a certain gentleman you might have come across, Rodney Slack.
Now a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, Rodney was my hero at the time, actually. I worshipped him. He didn't always get in the team that season, that 69-70 season, but he was a great, great goalkeeper. Other players stick out in the memory. Bill Leavers had nicked from Chelmsford four players that had won the Southern League with Chelmsford a season or two before, and they three remained in 69-70. One was Peter Leggett, the winger. Now, I'll argue this all day long. We've never, ever had a better winger than Peter Leggett. On his day, he could take any team in the world apart. Trouble is, he had a few off days as well. Terry Eades was another from Chelmsford. He was massive at the back. And up front, you had Bill Cassidy. He was just a goal machine. Also up front, knocking in the goals, was George Harris. He'd come from Reading with Colin Meldrum, another player who had a big influence at the Abbey. George Harris got 35 goals that season, I remember. Other names spring out. Jimmy Thompson, Brian Grant, Robin Hardy, Dennis Walker, Mel Slack, no relation, Roly Horry, John McKinven, and then, of course, a few players who made cameos. I always remember those, just played a few games. Jerry Baker, Alan Doyle, who's still around in football, local football. John Saunders, he was a tiny, tiny winger. I'll never forget John. It was a good squad. It was a really good squad, although by today's standards, very, very thin on the ground.
Well, sounds like a strong squad, like you said, full of experienced pros at the time. And I guess the key question with all of this, Pat, 50 years earlier on this week, it was to the day that they got elected to the Football League, such a big occasion at the time. But where does this side rank? How should this side be viewed when looked back by supporters now? Where should it rank amongst all the used sides? How important is this side in the club's history?
Well, it's massively important. I mean, it is so difficult to rank or rate sides in different eras. But, this, because of its achievement, this was one of the great United sides. There's no doubt about that. I mean, they wouldn't have stood a chance against John Beck's team of the early 90s. They wouldn't have stood much chance against, John Doherty's side of the 1980s that stayed up in the second division for 6 years. But it's the significance of getting into league makes this United team an all-time great. Individually, they might not have had the ability of some of the great players, other great players we've seen at United, but they rank up there, all the way at the top.
Well, it sounds like a real rags-to-riches story, but that makes the actual story of it, which at the end of the day is probably the most important things when we look back on teams of years gone by, especially to those fans. The fact that they went from, like you said, the Camps League to the Football League in 23 years, such an amazing achievement. And that really puts it right at the top of those famous United sides of years gone by. Pat, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Great to reminisce. Glad you're well, and I'm sure we'll speak again soon.
I hope so, Ollie. Thanks very much. All the best. Cambridge 105 Radio.
Sports on Cambridge 105 Radio. Welcome back to the 105 Sports Special here on Cambridge 105 Radio. My name is Ollie Slack. Now, snooker has been one of the first sports to return to professional action after the government's easing of lockdowns over the weekend. And starting with the Championship League in Milton Keynes, Neil Robertson and Joe Perry are both in action this week. Joining us to discuss it is Phil Haig, who covers snooker for the Metro. He's also been watching the action in Milton Keynes this week. Thanks very much for coming on the show, Phil.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Phil, first of all, for yourself, how has lockdown been? What, 2 or so months we've had of it now?
Yeah, it's been okay. Can't complain really compared to stuff that some people are going through, but it's very nice to have the sport coming back. It's going to make things a lot more entertaining.
I was going to say, snooker's been one of, if not the first professional sport to come back. How happy are you? You've actually got something to cover.
Yes, it's a relief to say the least. These last couple of days have been good. You can tell the players are a little bit rusty, but it's still good to watch something.
Good. And are you reporting from home? Obviously not in Milton Keynes. Are you basically just doing your normal job but watching it on your laptop or your TV?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just going off the ITV coverage, which has been excellent.
So this event in Milton Keynes is the Championship League. Am I right saying it was a non-ranking event, but is it just for sort of ranking, qualification and points and prize money?
Yeah, exactly. It's been around for a while now. I think 2008 it started, and it's always been non-ranking and always been behind closed doors. So it's sort of well set up to be the first tournament back after the hiatus. But yeah, it's never had any bearing on the rankings, but nice little earner for some of the players.
And how have the players got ready for the tournament? Because I heard Judd Trump speak the other day about going isolation and testing, etc. What's the process been to get the players back ready playing again?
Well, a lot of them have struggled with practice over during lockdown because there's less than 10 professional players that have tables at home. So and they've been locked out of the clubs, obviously. So that's why a lot of them are rusty. They've just been able to get in the last week or so when they've come to agreements with clubs. But then in terms of getting into the tournament, they all have to be tested for coronavirus the day before they're due to play. Then they go into isolation in a hotel, which is attached to the venue. And they have to just wait it out. They stay overnight. They're just locked in. People come and tape the doors down so they're not leaving. And then they find out their result the morning that they're due to play. And if it's negative, then they're all good to go ahead and play. And if not, then they have to go back into quarantine. But thankfully, no one's tested positive yet.
Well, glad that's the case so far. And you've spoken to some of the players in the tournament. What have they said it's like? Is it slightly eerie? I know it's a tournament that's played behind closed doors anyway. So regards to the actual Championship League, it's probably pretty normal, but the whole testing rigmarole, etc.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a strange experience. I think the feedback's generally been pretty good. Everyone knows that these are strange circumstances and they've got to do what they've got to do. But yeah, it's just odd going down the previous afternoon and then get the test done, which sounds quite unpleasant. You know, it's a big long swab up your nose and down your throat. It's not much fun. And then yeah, it's just, I think it's just boring, you know. They've just got to go into their individual hotel rooms and sit there from 5 or 6 in the afternoon until 10 or 11 the next morning. So it's just boring. But I think, they all appreciate what needs to be done and they're all quite impressed that Matchroom and Will Snooker have got this going.
It's interesting because you often hear players sort of moan a little bit about the schedule and going away to places for a long time and just being, you know, the downside of the tour has been locked up in your hotel room. But now they're not even allowed out to see the sights of other countries. They're just stuck in the hotel room.
Yeah, can't even go and have a walk around Milton Keynes, which I'm sure they're devastated about.
Some say they might be lucky, hey. But, what does the revised schedule look like then, Phil? I think there's been a few tournaments sort of scrapped, or what have we got left for the 2019-20 seasons to speak?
The World Championship should be going ahead on the 31st of July. And then the Tour Championship in London now is expected to go ahead just before that, although that's not been officially confirmed. And the main worry is really the qualifiers before the World Championship, because that's what the majority of players are worried about, because it's only the top 16 that go straight to Sheffield. So they should be on around the 15th to the 18th of July, but again, not entirely confirmed. And that's what is important about the Championship League this week, because it's almost a bit of a test event to see what needs to be done for those games. So as long as this all goes swimmingly, then hopefully the qualifiers can be confirmed quite soon afterwards.
Well, fingers crossed. Could it be great to see the World Championship in July, August time at the Crucible? And you spoke about the Tour Championship. That moved us quite nicely on to Neil Robertson. He got to the final last year, just lost to Ronnie O'Sullivan 13-11. How do you expect him to go this time round with the last two events, should they go ahead?
I mean, he's been superb this season. Number two in the world. He's won three tournaments. He's one of the favourites for every tournament he plays in. Judd Trump obviously being the favourite for everything he goes in at the minute, but Robertson's usually just behind him. He's going to be up there, second or third favourite for the World Championship for sure. It's been a bit of an anomaly that he's not been back to the final since he won it. But I think everyone expects him to reach the final, if not win it again at some point. So yeah, he's a real threat in everything, and he will be this week in Milton Keynes as well.
And it's been a really interesting year, last few years covering Robertson, obviously because of his unfortunate circumstance with mental health and his family as well. But the last couple of years, he really seems to hit some form, especially sort of the back end of the season. You remember last campaign, it was virtually him or Trump sort of trading finals each week, and he just seemed to hit a really good, strong patch of form.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he's got a really great work ethic, and you know, he's sort of moving into his late 30s now, but he's adamant that he's trying to improve every season, and the results do show that. As you say, a lot of finals or wins. At the end of last season, it was him, Ronnie, and Trump really just sweeping up everything, and it's largely been him and Trump this season as well. He's been pretty consistent for some years now. He's generally won a tournament every season. He's sort of really been hoovering up two or three a year now of the last three or four years. And I'd say one of the best and most consistent players on the tour.
And where would you say his form is currently at or over the last 12 months or so compared to years gone by? Obviously won the World Championship almost a decade ago now. Where would you put that form against his current form?
It's a bit strange with the form because it's sort of gone out the window the last two or three months because no one's played. But overall, over the last season, he had a weirdly sort of slow start to this year. Didn't reach a quarter over the first two or three tournaments. But then that Champion of Champions wins where he beat Judd Trump in the final. I mean, that was one of the greatest matches you'll ever see. And that spurred him on, and he's gone on and won the European Masters and the World Grand Prix. He's looking excellent. As good as he's looked, yeah. But as I say, quite consistent over the last two or three years. But yeah, very, very good form.
Let's move on to Joe Perry, another one of our local players up towards Mark's Chatteris Way, slightly to the north of the county. He reached the semi-final of the Northern Irish Open this year, a few sort of quarter-final placings as well. But every time we sort of seemed to hear a snippet from Joe, and when he spoke post-match, he always seemed a little bit grumpy about his game. What would your assessment be?
He has that demeanour sometimes. Although he's been in commentary this week and he's been excellent. I think he's got a future in there when he stops playing. He's sort of in that ballpark where it's a lot of quarterfinals and doesn't often go past then. As you say, one semi. He reached one final last year, I think. But it's been sort of solid. It's been a quite steady, solid Joe Perry season, really. I think he'd be not too displeased with four quarterfinals. His aim really would have been to stay in the 16, and he's just one spot about out of that at world number 17. But otherwise, you know, steady, solid season for him, really.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because if you offered someone before they started snooker, you'd be the 17th best player in the world, and you could, you know, go for your whole career and obviously travel the world and earn a fair decent amount of money as well. You'd snap your hand off for it. But equally, I guess players are judged on trophies and what they win as well. And Joe's got one ranking title. What can he do to get over the line to try and become a multiple ranking title winner?
I think you just need a bit of luck with draws and stuff. Oh, he's clearly got the game. I mean, he's been a professional for 25 years, nearly 30 years. And he's been very, very consistent throughout that. And with the amount of tournaments now, he's very, very well capable of winning one of them, you know. I'm not sure he's ever going to win the World Championship at this stage, but, you know, there's so many tournaments knocking around that he can certainly pick up one or two more.
What would his hopes be for the World Championship, July, August time, Phil? Probably slightly different ambitions to Robbo's.
I guess so. I mean, yeah, I mean, as you say, he's the 17th best player in the world, so you can't rule him out of doing anything, really. But it's been a while since he's been past the second round, reached the semi-final back in 2008, I think it was. So yeah, I mean, if a run to the quarter or the semi, I'm sure he'd snap his hand off for that now.
And who knows, you know, someone like Ali Carter, who surprised everyone at the Masters, firstly being included and then making it again, get into the final. Maybe Joe could be inspired by that and have a slightly similar run, hopefully so anyway. With regards to next season starting, just lastly, Phil, how quickly is the turnaround potentially for the 2020-21 season?
Difficult to say at the minute. They've not made any announcements. I mean, the World Championship, although it's very much expected to go ahead, is still not 100% confirmed. So I think they're going to get that out of the way and then see what happens. A lot of the early events in the season are usually over in China. And that obviously presents some difficulties given the current situation. But I spoke to Barry Hearn a few weeks ago and spoke to Jason Ferguson, the chairman of the WPBSA. And they both seem very confident that China will be up and running and hosting events in the near future. The only problem might be quarantine. So you might have to go and spend 2 weeks in isolation when you go over there. But they might do a few tournaments all at once, so it makes it worthwhile and not everyone's not shooting back and forward. So, yeah, I mean, I would really be guessing when the new season would start, but they're confident of getting it going as normal, really.
Well, Phil, thanks very much for joining us. Really appreciate it. And hopefully when the World Championship's all wrapped up and done, it won't be too long before the new season starts again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think the players are raring to get going again, definitely after this break. They'll happily have another break, I'm sure, after the Worlds. But yeah, maybe not as long as normal, and then they can get playing regularly again, hopefully.
Thanks for speaking to us, Phil. Much appreciated.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
And just to round up, when our players are in action, Joe Perry plays tonight in Group 4. If he qualifies in top spot out of the four in his group, he will make it through to the semi-final groups. Neil Robertson, he's in Group 16, which get underway on Sunday, so a bit longer to wait for him. But again, if he qualifies top spot in that group, then he will make it through to the semi-final group stages as well. The semi-final groups will take place on the 9th and 10th of June, which is Tuesday and Wednesday of next week. And then the final group will be played on Thursday the 11th, where each of the four players will play each other again to determine the winner in the league table. Hopefully both of our players will be in the mix. You can catch all the coverage on ITV4. Cambridge 105 Radio.
Sports on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Yep, you're listening to the 105 Sports Special here on Cambridge 105 Radio. Let's turn our attentions to cricket now then. And this week, the CCA released proposals for the 2020 season, if we are to get underway, in Divisions 1, 2 and 3 of the Senior Leagues, which is the second tier down from the top level, which is the Whiteson Partners Division 1, 2 and 3. Joining me now to discuss these proposals is the CCA Competition Secretary, Martin Livermore. Martin, thanks very much for coming on the show.
No problem at all, Ollie.
Martin, before we get on to the new proposals, these blueprint, if you like, that have been put forward to the Facebook group over the weekend, let's just get the latest from the ECB about recreational cricket. Where do we currently stand with it all in regards to delays and suspensions, etc.?
Yeah, the last update we had was that the domestic cricket has been suspended until 1st of August. We're at the CCA. We've been asked, you know, what's going to happen for the rest of the season. if we can start on the 1st of August. So that's where we stand. As far as the ECB stands, obviously everything's got to be safe, you know, with all the social distancing regulations. That's more or less where we are at the moment.
Yeah, it said the domestic season has been postponed until August the 1st, the recreational season until further notice. So again, these proposals that we're going to talk about have been made on the assumption that we'll start August 1st or around that time. Is there any chance, because they've said that the recreational season will be suspended until further notice, is there any chance we could play before the 1st of August?
I don't think that's very likely, but I don't, until we hear from either the government or the ECB, we're really not going to be able to do anything as regards the CCA. There were a number of clubs that were individuals that were looking into the way of forming friendly leagues and what have you, but I've not really been involved in that. It was just from the CCA point of view that I got involved at the end of last week, really.
And has anything changed with regards to the outdoor net facility usage? You know, following government easing a lockdown over the weekend, they're allowing that six people are able to meet. Does that change the fact that at the minute outdoor net facilities is still pretty strict guidance from the ECB that it's one on one?
It's very very strict, I believe. I think there have been a number of people that have been using nets. Just locally, I've seen people in Hatteras playing in the nets last Saturday or Sunday, actually. And then I believe Blundisham are on the way to using the nets again as well. That's just local to me, but I've not been involved in any net play, but there are various rules that we're going to have to abide by.
And as far as the ECB is concerned, there's been no sort of further message. It is pretty much as it was, despite the government's recent announcements.
That's right, yes. As far as I'm aware, that's right.
So let's get on to these proposals then, Martin, that were put forward in the CCA Facebook over the weekend. Firstly, I guess, how did you come up with them? Because there's a lot to take in with attention to the senior leagues, that's Division 1, 2 and 3. How did you come up with the ideas and put these proposals forward?
Well, from back in the start of March, when we realised that there weren't going to be likely to be problems with the fixtures, well, I came up with my sort of ideas as to how to go about restructuring. I think people want competitive cricket. So I've come up with the idea of having small groups rather than large divisions so that people can play and certainly regionalise the groups as best possible, because obviously travelling with youngsters that perhaps don't have their own transport, that could be an issue. So I've done some grouping as best I can to give the best chance of getting the games played. Now, as it is, I've got the senior league, I've got six groups of five. Junior league, well, I've started grouping those, but as they start with smaller divisions, it makes it a little bit more tricky to group groups of five. But that's the way I'm going to aim to carry on, so that the format stays the same throughout the CCA.
Let's talk about the senior league then. First of all, Martin, what are the plans you've got? You mentioned you've split each league into two groups.
The senior league, I've just, for instance, group A of the senior league, at the moment I've got Chatteras, City of Ely, Longstanton, March and Needingworth. And a more southern section, you've got Abingdon, Camborne, Cambridge NCI, Great Shelford and Royston. So those have all come out of the senior league Division 1, and I've just made two groups out of that division, really. And the same applies for the senior league 2 and senior league 3. Now, of course, we don't know that all of these teams and players are going to want to play in a shortened season. So I've got to be in touch with all clubs to find out what they want to do, really.
Yeah, that looks like that's the process for the next couple of months until these plans potentially get really underway. And how does it work with teams playing each other? It looks as though there's some sort of playoff system.
Yeah, what I've done is each team will play each other once, which actually gives each team a free week. Now, that free week, it has been suggested by somebody on the Facebook group that they play a friendly with the free team from the other half. So that could well work as well. There is a playoff system, basically, that you play five weeks, which would be from August the 1st until August the 29th. And then the final on September the 5th would be the playoffs, which would be between the, shall we say, the teams that finish first in each group and second in each group and so on. So therefore, you'll get like a rating of 1 to 10. Now, this doesn't actually mean that there'll be anybody promoted or relegated next season. It's just an idea of a way of getting some competitive cricket for the teams and players that do want to play. Now, obviously, I guess most people will say they want to play, but I can't say that that's going to be the same for everybody. Some people might still be self-isolating at that point.
That could be the case. So we don't know what will happen in 2 months or so's time. But what sort of reaction have you had from clubs or those on social media so far?
Yeah, well, as I've said, it's as though everybody's answering as individuals rather than from the club perspective. This is why I've got to write to all the clubs and ask for their point of view, what they would like to do. It might be that some clubs won't want all their teams to enter because they perhaps can't get enough players for all their teams. It might be some don't want to enter at all. It might be some, you know, all want to enter. So, you know, until I find that out, it's going to be difficult to actually conclude any divisions. But, you know, you've got to come up with some kind of plan. Otherwise, you can't leave it till the last minute and everything happens all at once.
Exactly. And now you've got that first real blueprint down. I guess it can now evolve and you can get those ideas, that feedback from clubs, and we can really start to see a potential 2020 season shape.
Yeah, I still can't be sure that anything's going to happen at all. But
of course,
it's just having something in place. If it can happen, then we can offer something. As I've said, the people that have given feedback on the social media, on Facebook, have generally been really positive, and it looks like lots of people are keen to play. But of course, there's lots of people that don't give their comments, and they could also mean that they're not keen to play. It's just with social media, it's people that have seen it and people that haven't.
How much does the clashes with football pitches come into your thinking, Martin, when putting these plans? Because I know it's obviously the end date is September the 5th, which is when about roughly the season would finish anyway. But of course, some may think, oh, we might be able to go into September and possibly even October to get as much cricket in as possible. But of course, that presents challenges with football pitches.
Yeah, every year we have people say, well, why don't we play longer in September when the weather's better? I mean, it's been brilliant so far. I think every week would have been able to play. So September, yeah, that's usually when the football season starts. At this stage, I mean, football's just the same as us for cricket. There's no fixed rules yet, and nobody really knows when they're going to be able to start anyway. Generally, we go up to the last week in August. Although there are clubs that can play that don't have football on their grounds, and they go into September. What I'll try and do is to fit the fixtures in around the clubs as best we can, and hopefully the clubs will be able to try and sort fixtures out with the football clubs and themselves so that they can get these fixtures played if we actually can go ahead.
And lastly, Martin, what do you think the biggest challenges will be? Of course, not only with just this schedule, but just playing recreational cricket in general, whether it be the ball, the wicketkeeper up to the stumps, or the change facilities.
You know, although the majority of the fielders are spread around the outfield, it'll make difficulty with wicketkeepers standing up. It's almost impossible, really. For bowlers polishing the ball, that's going to be an issue. And even transferring the ball from the wicketkeeper back to the bowler, that all causes a problem. It's something people are looking into, and although things won't be normal, it might be that we can play. If we can, that's great. If we can't, then it'll just go into next season, really.
Which I'm sure would feel like a very long winter to wait for the 2021 season. Martin, thank you very much for joining us. Glad you're well, and hopefully we can talk a bit more later on in the season, and these plans, proposals may well be fully in place by then.
Let's hope so. Thanks, Ollie.
So that was Martin Livermore there of the CCA, the competition secretary, discussing these new proposals for the senior divisions. Let's just clarify those proposals now then. And each of the senior divisions, 1, 2 and 3, will be split in half into groups of 5 based on location. Each of those teams will play each other once in a round robin, and the winners of the groups will play off against each other. So in Senior Division 1, Group A winner and the Group B winner will play off against each other. Group A runners-up and Group B runners-up will play against each other, and so on until you get a full league table. And likewise with Senior Divisions 2 and 3 as well. So let's get the thoughts of one of the clubs who will be largely affected by these proposals. Cambridge NCI are in Senior Division 1, who play their cricket at Fitzwilliam College. They've been split into Group B. Captain Mike Sewell joins me on the line now to discuss it. Mike, thanks very much for coming on the show.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah, how have you been, Mike? It's been a frustrating time for everyone involved in cricket, with, you know, most sports having their season been interrupted, but cricket hasn't even started yet.
Yeah, absolutely. It is annoying. I was talking to someone yesterday from our team who's come over from New Zealand for 3 years, and he thinks he may need to go back to New Zealand next April. So there's a chance that he'll only have ended up playing one season for us, even though he's been in the country for 3 years. So kind of summarises the situation, really. So yeah, we just never had a chance to get going. We were doing winter nets. It was all going well. We had some new people to come along, feeling quite positive about the season, and then obviously it all had to stop.
Yeah, frustrating all round. You mentioned nets there. Have you managed to get your nets set up and running for the summer? Of course, the ECB announced on the 15th of May strict guidelines for usage of outdoor net facilities. Is that something Cambridge NCI have managed to get up and running?
Yeah, it's a challenge for us because we don't kind of have any of our own grounds as such. We use either college grounds, Cambridge College grounds, or Parker's Peace. And there's no nets on Parker's Peace, and the college grounds has been no access, or hardly any access for anybody. So to be honest, that's the real challenge for us. You know, we're saying to people, go, if you can, follow the guidelines, set up your own, you know, do your own things. But it's difficult for the club as a whole to set up and organise anything, to be honest. So we're very much encouraging our teams to stay fit and do what they can. But it's hard for us, as I say, to organise anything in the moment.
Yeah, I was speaking to Johnny Atkinson, who plays for Cambridge Cricket Club, another cricket club in sort of around the city. And he was saying similarly, of course, their home ground is Clare College, but with that being closed, they've not able to get any nets at all. And the majority of clubs around the county have allowed their nets only for club members, which is understandable. And that provides a problem for, I guess, yourselves and the likes of Cambridge, that they haven't been able to get that practice in.
Yeah, obviously it's difficult if you don't have your own home ground in that way. But yeah, so we'll have to see how it pans out.
Has that been even more difficult for the members? Because everyone who plays cricket usually throughout the summer is so desperate to get back out there. And also mainly because of the social aspect. We talked about this on our show here about the sort of social aspect at the start of the summer, or what would have been the start of the season, and how people could potentially miss it, affecting people's mental health. And then to not have nets and not have that interaction with your clubmates again, that must be really difficult.
Yeah, it's definitely frustrating. You know, we've NCI runs 4 teams. So, and then we've got, you know, probably over 100 people who are members of the club who might play, some of them might just play 2 or 3 games a summer, whereas some people are playing every week. And obviously the social side is an important part of it. And, you know, the Facebook group's going pretty full on. there's quizzes happening, I think, and various other things, but it's not the same as actually meeting up with your teammates to play. So it is a really frustrating for people. And yeah, and some people really look forward to playing cricket in the summer. It's the highlight of their year for some of our members. So it's such a shame it's not happening. Mm-hmm. And as I said, with this weather, it's just taunting us.
I imagine we'll come on to the proposals now. And I imagine if these proposals that we're going to talk about were to get underway, it can just be typical, wouldn't it, if the rain started to fall around August, September time. So the CCA announced on their Facebook a couple of days ago, over the weekend, they basically put down this blueprint, really, initial ideas for proposals for the 2020 season, assuming we can get underway in August. What were your initial thoughts of the plans, Mike?
Well, I think it's great that they've had a look and really tried to get something organised and tried to have a plan and get a plan in place, even if we're honest, we're not sure it's going to happen at all, where we'll be allowed to play, but it's great that there's something there. I think it's good that to have something organised rather than, you know, that obviously we'd all love to play, do any sort of cricket. I'd be happy, you know, and as they're saying, it would just be a kind of one-off league. It wouldn't count for the future. But having organised cricket like that would be fantastic as far as I'm concerned. So I think it's a real credit to them. They've got as far as they have. I guess, as I say, if we can, I think it's nice to play with a bit of a competitive edge. So that will bring that into it. I think we'll only, I also like the fact there's some quite a lot of talk about being reasonably flexible about formats. So, you know, for example, we normally play CCA 45 over games, but if that could be reduced potentially, certainly as we get into September and it gets darker, that might make sense. And to make it more flexible for teams, that seemed a pretty sensible plan as well. So yeah, if it can be made to work, it would be absolutely fantastic, because I'm sure everyone's raring to get out there and play.
Cambridge NCI are in the Senior 1 division, and you've been split into Group B out of the two, alongside Abington, Camborne, Great Shelford and Royston. Now, yourselves have finished 8th, 9th, 8th and 7th over the past 4 years in Senior 1. How do you fancy your chances with that group of 14s with you?
I think we've always had good games against all of those, some really nice grounds to play at as well. And you know, there's, to be honest, in the whole of Senior 1, there's some good clubs, so we've always enjoyed playing against those teams. So I'm sure it'd be good. I'm remembering a few victories and a few losses against all of those clubs in recent years. So it'd be nice to go one better. But the main thing is, to be honest, for all of us, just to get out there and play, frankly.
You did mention the formats as well, whether it be T20 or the longer format, which is 45 overs, like you said, in Senior 1's case. Which would you prefer to play?
I think we'd want to play more than T20 if we can, especially during August. But it might be quite interesting to mix it up. I don't know if that would work in a league. But no, I'd rather play a longer format, but I think 45 overs is probably a bit optimistic. So I'd probably be opting for somewhere in between, to be honest. Yeah, but you know, I think we'd like to, if we can, and there's, the days are long enough and it works, then, you know, 35, 40 overs would be great. But I think it's important that both, I think if the teams can just be flexible and realistic and about the fact that we just want to get the game on, as they say, then that's really important. I also think, you know, come September, there'll become challenges as you know, football seasons might be starting, people have got other commitments, you know, students potentially going back. So it may be hard to get teams out for long matches in September, so having flexibility on the format could be useful to make sure we can get enough players out.
I was also going to mention that as well. And potentially, could there be a cut-off date with regards to Cambridge NCI? Would you say, look, we can't play any more games past this point? Playing on college grounds, not only, of course, it may clash with the likes of football teams or players going back to play for football teams, but the ground could be shared with, of course, with the colleges and other teams and who clubs will use it. So could there be a slight problem there as well, the longer you go into September?
There could be a real problem there, yeah. Well, yeah, definitely that could be a problem. We need to think about all of those factors. But I guess, you know, I think in a way, I think it's up to the CCA to put on what it can and to suggest what it can. And then the clubs would need to work around it. And I just think people would need to have a flexible attitude, really, and a flexible approach. Except that we're all just trying to get some decent cricket in.
And lastly, I was wondering whether you'd actually be able to play on Parker's Piece. Of course, you mentioned to me at the top of the interview that your thirds and fourths play on Parker's Piece, and the CCA are announcing proposals for the junior leagues in due course. But will your teams be able to play on Parker? Because I imagine balls flying everywhere potentially could be slightly against the rules from the government with regards to members of the public potentially picking up balls. It could be chaos.
Yeah, as I said, I really want to be positive about us all playing cricket by August, but there's a lot of challenges around, you know, cricket is a unique game in that way, and it does pose a lot of challenges, and I can imagine that could be complicated. But we've obviously, you know, been playing on Parker's Piece for a long time, NCI, and lots of clubs have played before, and it'd be nice to think that we could be back out there playing again, especially this last season the ground wasn't used because the surface relayed, so we're all keen to get out there and use it again.
Having played on there many times during the midweek as well, and the sun setting over Cambridge, it's a lovely place to play, and also quite a laugh when people do walk past and just onto the pitch. That is quite funny at times.
It absolutely, it's certainly a different experience, especially kind of with international students who've got no idea what cricket is who are walking past watching what's going on. But as I say, the surface has been relayed there, so it's again it's another frustration that we may not be able to use it. One thing I would say is that for a club like NCI, we've got four teams. I think again, you know, CCA maybe need to be realistic about sometimes it can be quite hard getting four teams out, even in the best of times. And by September, for example, that might prove to be quite a challenge. So again, we're all going to need to be realistic about that. But at the same time, we really want to give as many people a chance to play as possible. So it might be worth having more teams out there. I guess we need to do a bit more research among our teams. I think there'll be some players who'll be pretty wary about playing, to be honest, at all, you know, and we'll be nervous about doing so. So we need to, you know, bear that in mind as well. So there's a lot to think about before August, should we get to a stage where we are allowed to play.
Well, we've got a couple of months before these proposals, if they do, of course, get the chance to be put into place, we'll go ahead. Mike, it's been a pleasure having you on. Thanks very much for coming on. And I'm sure we'll catch up again soon in the summer, hopefully, to have some cricket to talk about.
Yeah, definitely. That would be great. Thanks very much. All the best. Cambridge 105.